VOA Africa.
Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington on this live broadcast. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Tuesday, July 25th, 2023. The Biden administration donates food to Sudanese and South Sudanese returnees fleeing conflict in Sudan.
The commodities we're receiving today constitute just a fraction of the additional resources the U.S. government is providing in South Sudan alone to help refugees and returnees fleeing the conflict in Sudan.
And prison authorities in western Bahr al-Ghazal state encourage inmates to grow their own food.
When there is no food, like 2 months ago, the contractors were failed to provide food. So we took some over to Dura and ground us here to the prison to feed the prisoners.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The U.S. government today donated an emergency supply of high-energy biscuits to the United Nations World Food Program for feeding people seeking safety in South Sudan after fleeing the ongoing conflict in Sudan. The 40.5 metric tons of high-energy biscuits will support people affected by the crisis in Sudan and those arriving at reception centers in various locations across South Sudan. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
Michael J. Adler, the U.S. ambassador to South Sudan, says the high-energy biscuits will enable WFP to respond to humanitarian emergency as the conflict in Sudan continues to drive thousands of refugees into South Sudan.
The commodities we're receiving today constitute just a fraction of the additional resources the U.S. government is providing in South Sudan alone to help refugees and returnees fleeing the conflict in Sudan. Our total assistance thus far is over $30 million, which in itself is but a fraction of the around $1 billion of assistance we provide to help people in South Sudan.
As the conflict in Sudan enters 100 days, WFP says it continues to receive nearly 2,000 returnees and refugees entering South Sudan daily. Mary Ellen McGrotty, the WFP country director in South Sudan, says so far 190,000 refugees and returnees have entered South Sudan, adding that a majority of the people seeking safety are returning South Sudanese. She says South Sudan faces other underlying challenges, including recent flooding and food insecurity, which have worsened the situation.
Because it is a country where 9.4 million people are in some need of some form of humanitarian assistance, and over 7.4 million people in what we classify as severe food insecurity, really driven by the combined shocks of the conflict that still continues in South Sudan, the climate change that the many communities across South Sudan, whether it be the floods of 4 years, unprecedented flooding, the drought that they're also seeing as they abut the Horn of Africa, and all that coming together and really making things extremely difficult for the people of South Sudan.
McGrotty says the biscuit will help WFP in responding to the needs of new arrivals at the border points.
As we said, the people coming back, the South Sudanese that are returning, they're a population on the move. They're coming in at places like Renk and Awil, and they need to get onwards home. So the biscuits are really going to help us give them a little bit of support on that journey home as we try to roll out food and nutrition assistance both at the border and in their places of return.
The 40.5 metric tons of high-energy biscuit will be distributed to some 45,000 South Sudanese returnees and refugees fleeing the conflict in Sudan. The USAID and WFP did not provide a specific dollar value for this in-kind contribution of high-energy biscuits. The contribution is part of the $11.5 million allocated by the United States to WFP in South Sudan for food, nutrition assistance, and support to logistics services. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Still in Juba, some Sudanese refugees with underlying health conditions say they are feeling the impact of the country's conflict. Some refugees living with chronic diseases like diabetes say they have no access to medical services at Gorom refugee camp outside South Sudan's capital, Juba. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayer visited the camp and filed this report.
Elderly people who fled the conflict in Sudan are struggling to find medical services at Gorom refugee camp in South Sudan. Jamila Salah Hassan, a Sudanese refugee in the camp, says she is suffering from chronic diseases that require urgent medical attention. She says, I'm suffering from diabetes and asthma. I came to the healthcare center here and found that they don't have equipment for asthma. I am told to go to Juba, but there are no services for chronic diseases there. I am requesting that oxygen should be brought here. I came here at 7, but I could not get an injection. 57-year-old Asha Hassan Mohammed is another Sudanese refugee suffering from diabetes and arthritis, a disease that affects human joints. Mohammed says she had planned to travel to Jordan for treatment, but the war disrupted her plans. Mohammed says her knees hurt, making her unable to walk on her own. She says the healthcare center in the camp does not have medication for her health condition. She says, I have been taken to the health center several times, but I was told that there were no services for my treatment here except in Juba. And to go to Juba, I should have a refugee card. I have 3 months here. Now I rely on these women to walk and to birth. Zedine Abdul Karim Muhammad, another Sudanese refugee at the Gorom camp, can only walk with crutches because of a disease that has made his foot swell. He says he was referred to Juba Teaching Hospital.
I was taken to Juba Teaching Hospital, but I was abandoned at the hospital for hours. Later, I was sent for X-ray. To find a doctor to see the result from X-ray, I was not able to see the doctor. I was returned to the camp in the evening without any treatment.
Joyce Dominic, the health manager at Gorom Refugee Settlement, says treatment for diabetes is available at the facility. She says registered refugees with health conditions that require advanced attention are often referred to Juba Teaching Hospital.
We have one case that normally receives the insulin, and then we have the solar fridge here. If that patient is having malaria, we have the treatment for malaria here free of charge. It doesn't require any proof of registration. The proof of registration is only needed if the patient is going to Juba for a medical operation. Juba. If you are not registered and your condition requires, for example, an operation at Juba Teaching Hospital, we cannot pay for that one.
The Africa Committee for the Rehabilitation of South Sudan, or ACROSS, is partnering with the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees to provide humanitarian support to about 9,000 Sudanese refugees at Gorom Refugee Settlement. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayer in Juba.
Authorities in western Bahr al-Ghazal state say they have embarked on farming to address looming food insecurity within the state's main prison. The acting director of WAU Central Prison says the prison service personnel and inmates have cultivated more than 200 acres of land for growing groundnuts and maize. For VOA News, Deng Gai Deng has the story from Bor.
South Sudan's prison service authorities say inmates at prison facilities across the country were facing critical food shortages after suppliers stopped deliveries to prison due to unpaid arrears. General Fidele Mujuk, the acting director general of WAU Central Prison, says the lack of funds and the need to rehabilitate the inmates prompted the authorities to promote farming in WAU.
The size of the farm last year was 90 fedans, but today for sure I am going to 200 fedans. Last year we were having 120 bags of groundnuts and 100 bags of dura. Well, there is no food. Like 2 months ago, the contractors were failed to provide food. So we took some over to Dura and ground here to the prison to feed the prisoners.
Majuk says large-scale farming at the correctional facility is aimed at equipping the inmates with agricultural skills to enable them to become productive when they rejoin their communities. He says the UN mission in South Sudan and UN Food and Agriculture Organization are supporting prison facilities in its large-scale farming. Joseph Banda is an advisor with UNMISS attached to prison service in Wau. Banda says engaging in food production provides inmates with an opportunity to learn new skills.
UNMISS has identified that there are some gaps within the prison service where they need help. And one of the areas is the area of food security. So we have come up with a project that is UNMISS together with the Food and Agriculture Organization to help develop prison farms so that the prisons can be self-reliant in terms of food production. Once this becomes a success, the plan is to roll it out to other parts of the country.
Mohamed Tapikul Islam is the head of the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization, or UNFAO, field office in Wau. Islam says the innovative approach will improve food security at correctional facilities.
If they can get every year good production, they can get the nutritious food from this farm. And additional food they can supply, sell to the market, and they can use there for own daily purposes. That's why this is the main objective, because this land, this is the resource. If we utilize properly, they can get more production and they can survive very nicely, and their food security will be improved for them.
UNFAO provides the prison farm in Wau with seeds, ox flours, and other tools, as well as guidance on food farming practices like line planting. Gerald Majuk says the number of inmates within the Wau Central Prison continues to grow, adding prison was originally designed to host 200 inmates, but the facility now accommodates 800 inmates. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Twitter has changed its famous bluebird logo. Find out more after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what's a bad habit that you have struggled to give up?
Bad habit. I love sleeping a lot. Yeah, that's my bad habit. I love sleeping. Sometimes I fail to catch up on time because of sleep.
That habit of being jealous to my wife, yes, that one. I've tried to be to control myself so that I should not be jealous of her, but I do fail.
A short temper, because I think that it is a genetic, so I can not give up.
I tend to overreact when my kids do something wrong, and I end up regretting the consequences of my actions after giving them too tough punishments.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
If you are in Sudan witnessing events taking place there, or if you have family you are talking to there, you can call us on WhatsApp and let us know how things are going there. Dial the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076. The number again, the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Conservationists in Kenya are petitioning the state to enact solutions to avoid the worst impact from climate change, including record droughts and floodings. Activists say direct say directives such as Kenya's lifting of a ban on logging is reversing gains made to lessen extreme weather linked to climate change. Victoria Amunga reports from Nairobi, Kenya.
Sote Lokotos has lived in this shelter in Baringo County, Kenya, for a decade now. Before this, she lived with her family on a farm. One night in 2013, water from a nearby lake engulfed their home. Fortunately, everyone escaped. She says that the water swept all their belongings and flooded their house. She says that she was separated from her other children and that she lives with her husband and only one child. Families like Lokotosis are bearing the brunt of climate change. It has affected millions around the world and is being felt every day in Kenya, where disasters like flooding and droughts have become more common over the past 20 years. Activists are demanding the Kenyan government commit to real solutions to prevent and minimize such catastrophes. Isaiah Kaaka is a member of the activist group Climate Clock.
We are trying to provide solutions and push for policy to act on, for instance, loss and damage.
Kenya's President William Ruto lifted a six-year ban on logging in July to create more jobs in timber harvesting. To conservationists, the decision undermines efforts to mitigate climate change as trees store carbon dioxide that contributes to global warming. But timber traders like Michael Oginga praise the move. He says, let them lift the ban so we can at least go back to our normal business. Business is low, he says. I can get one customer a week. I could get about 10 customers a week before the ban. This is what we depend on for food. Global temperatures have already risen an average of 1.1 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels, according to the United Nations. Droughts have become more chronic in the Horn of Africa, displacing millions of people, sinking them into poverty and hunger. Aid group Minority Rights Group International is trying to help villagers in Kenya cope with the changes. The group's Africa media officer, Billy Rothungeyo, explains.
They need to adapt, so they need to change the ways they use soil. They need to make conscious choices around farming practices, how they cultivate, how to plant trees.
Environmentalists say by adopting new policies at both the governmental and the individual level, Kenya can guard against many of the worst impacts of climate change. Victoria Amunga for VOA News, Nairobi.
Delays equals denial. Act in time.
A white X on a black background has replaced the famous bluebird logo for the desktop version of Twitter. It has yet to appear on the mobile app. Twitter owner Elon Musk made the replacement official yesterday. The billionaire owner has long envisioned creating a super app that will offer a number of services from online banking to messaging via video. Jerry Belvins is a journalist and a public affairs professor at the University of Cincinnati. He tells VOA's Carol Van Dam that rebranding the social media platform is not a bad idea.
His stewardship of Twitter has been anything but successful so far. He's alienated a lot of core users of Twitter. You know, for instance, you know, making people paying to be verified. For instance, that used to be a real status symbol, where now it's just a cheap gimmick that anyone can get, right? And you have all these parody accounts that are, you know, verified, if you will. So it has become, you know, kind of a joke, along with, you know, limiting, you know, the number of posts that you have by reinstating all of these accounts that had been booted off. So at this point, I feel like he's stopped digging the hole, right? Let's just, you know, get away from that. Let's create something new. And I think there's, you know, there's at the very least there's an opportunity, you know, to bounce back. It's Twitter is essentially destroyed at this point. So why not, you know, build something new and try to make it distinct than what it was before. It'll certainly, you know, change, you know, the narrative, but also has the opportunity to do something new.
This sounds to me like you're saying we need to stop digging the hole, start over brand new, and just he's trying to basically tell people to forget about Twitter, which is kind of hard, isn't it, when people are so wedded to Twitter. In other countries too, especially in Africa, there's a lot of Twitter followers and people who use that as their main communication.
Right. Exactly. And there are a lot of people who, you know, were loyalists, but really those people have been let down anyway. And I count myself in that group. You know, Twitter has been my bread and butter, not only personally and professionally. It's, you know, it's been the main social medium that I've used for professional networking, that kind of thing, but also in my research. You know, Twitter's API was great. You know, they would give, you know, academicians, you know, access to it. You could, you know, the application system to be able to access tweets. It was pretty efficient. And some of us have stuck around anyway because, you know, we've put so much time and effort into it. I mean, I think if you're someone who is upset with what he's done and you're still around like I am, that says something. I'm going to stick around for X too.
What about this? It's going to be the everything app.
Right, right. Well, yeah, I think that's also somewhat of a response to Threads in the sense that, you know, Zuckerberg had, you know, kind of a flex move with Threads, where it was very, you know, Twitter-like, you know, having, you know, Instagram, you know, which is very visual, Threads, which is, you know, more about short text messages, and then, you know, Facebook, which tends to be a little more personal, had kind of the, you know, the holy trinity, whereas, you know, Twitter, it was just so much more of its own thing. So trying to rebrand this as X and making it a, you know, a one-stop shop that's going to be, you know, everything. Like I said earlier, it's not the worst idea I've heard.
That's Jeffrey Belvins, a journalism and public affairs professor at the University of Cincinnati. He was speaking with my colleague Carol Van Damme. African countries are spending billions of dollars trying to penetrate the biggest outbound tourist market in the world, but with limited access. China is Africa's largest single trade partner, but its citizens remain hesitant to explore a continent that often in the news for the wrong reasons, like conflict and food shortages. VOA's Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
Kenya, South Africa, Tanzania, and Egypt are among the African countries battling for a bigger slice of the huge pie that's Chinese tourism. In 2019, before the COVID-19 pandemic decimated global tourism, 155 million Chinese citizens visited foreign destinations. But only 94,000 of them visited South Africa, the African country that attracts the most Chinese visitors. In comparison, government figures show about 280,000 tourists came from Britain and 260,000 arrived from the United States.
It's not an easy market to get into. It does have a lot of potential, but it needs a lot of good understanding.
Mike Fabricius specializes in tourism management, consulting, and marketing. He's worked for the United Nations and World Bank on tourism projects. Fabricius says African countries are mistakenly targeting sheer numbers of Chinese visitors.
I don't think Africa is a place for the mass tourism Chinese market. And often the figures are cited, you know, about this massive, huge, big market. But I think when one zones it down and you bring it down to the market niches and the market segments, it becomes a lot more manageable and, you know, finding the right partner.
His advice is to focus on attracting segments of the Chinese market, like younger tourists seeking adventurous experiences such as climbing Mount Kilimanjaro, and Chinese people wanting to experience the culture and cuisine of Africa and its diverse wildlife. Even then, says Fabricius, challenges remain.
Service delivery needs to be improved, and I think there is a general avoidance of risk in that market, especially now post-COVID. That's another thing, is assurances of safety, and the safety issue is the big deterrent.
He explains that many Chinese perceive Africa as dangerous. Rosemary Anderson is chairperson of FedHasa, which represents hospitality industries across southern Africa. She says most African governments stifle tourism with needlessly strict visa rules.
People have to present themselves either to the embassy in Beijing or Shanghai or otherwise a visa tourist center. China is vast, so that would be quite a logistical and cost and time effort to actually do that. So we really make it very difficult for Chinese to visit us at the moment.
Anderson says the world's top destinations offer the Chinese online visa application services, and Africa must follow suit or it'll be left behind. Kenya and Tanzania say they're in the process of simplifying their visa requirements for Chinese tourists. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
And I have a special announcement for you. VOA's English to Africa will be 60 years old on August 4th. Help us celebrate by sharing your thoughts on our programs. Send a voice or text to this WhatsApp number, +1 202 258 3076. Again, the number is +1 202 258 3076. Tell us what is your favorite program, or let us know about a particular news that connected with you. Recall a favorite memory of VOA Africa and tell us what stories you think we should cover or how we can improve. That number again is +1 202 258 3076. Thank you for supporting us for 60 years. And that's all we prepared for you this Tuesday, July 25th, 2023. We now take you to Zandeland with the song Sogote by Tutu. Been listening to Tutu and the song Sogote. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Cornelius, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
fire.